just one small thing, you know, except for those who have some responsibility, like the responsibility with the group here. Otherwise, the others, please try to avoid, you know, all the time going to the office, yeah? Being all the time at the office. That's not the Gompa. The Gompa is here. There is no teaching there, there's nothing. So therefore, please, unless there is something necessary, otherwise, don't just spend your time in the office. Leave the office alone. Yeah. So, so seeking, so in meditation, so everyone meditate, he realized what is not, you know, what meditation is not, so the purpose of meditation. So one approach meditation with so many expectation, yeah, approach meditation with all sorts of expectation, ideas. Even coming to India, you know, people come to India expecting a peaceful, quiet place. So he doesn't imagine that India is very noisy. So one come with, but then when he comes to India, so one realized. So therefore, that is also realization. So one, therefore, one has to come to India to realize what India really is. Yeah, so it's good. So one comes to India and knows what India is. So same, one does a course or does meditation, try to meditate, and then one knows what meditation really is. Otherwise, one never know. So, if one wish to meditate and does not meditate, then one lives in, then one regret, you know? So one regret. I wish I meditate. Instead, when one actually meditate, he repent. So if you don't meditate, you will regret. But then if you meditate, you will repent. Yes. So it's better to live with regret or repentance. So they are both, you know, uncomfortable. Some people may regret, but normally, so one become realistic, you know, therefore, so one realize that meditation is not what we taught. So meditation is for the sake of knowing, knowledge, that's the purpose of meditation. It's not for the sake of feeling relaxed, peaceful, and so forth. There are many other things, yeah? Or for the sake of be happy. So there are many things that can make us happy. Yeah. So many things that can make us happy. Many things that can relax. Nowadays, you know, there are also many substance things that people take, you know, to relax their mind. So, so one doesn't need to do a retreat if that is the purpose, the goal. So we don't need to do a retreat. So when we do retreat, I say it's for the sake of knowledge, knowing. Yeah. And in the process of knowing, knowledge, so in order to acquire the knowledge, it needs effort, and therefore there are hardship, unpleasantness. So one change the perception, so one knows, oh, that's what is the retreat. Therefore it is good. Yeah. So one cannot really be disappointed, you know, so. Therefore, as we say, the expectation brings disappointment, yeah? So, therefore, cultivating too much expectation, you know, encouraging, when there is too much expectation, then one is bound to disappointment. or irritation, yeah, annoyed, yeah, or been discouraged. Therefore, having realized or having seen that there is expectation, so avoid, try to not to cultivate, let it go. Yeah. So the expectation. So therefore, anyway, so one become realistic with regard to what meditation is. It's a hard work, you know. So meditation is a work. So there is an example, you know, the Buddha said, not to discourage, so the Buddha said, imagine conquering an army of 1,000 person, 1,000 times, yeah? Imagine that you are conquering an army of 1,000 person, 1,000 times. That is, see, Buddha say, that is much easier than conquering one's mind. So, so Buddha is saying that to see, to show the how serious is a serious thing. So taming, conquering one's mind, and this to show that not everybody is capable. Yeah, not everybody is capable. So not everybody can see it. You know, day after day by oneself. You know, with one's own mind, trying not to react. Right? See, not using. You know, we are not using any particular entertainment with the meditation, like a mantra recitation, or chanting, or visualization, or thinking over something. So one can entertain oneself with this type of meditation, can create something. So the type of meditation that we're doing is observing. So it is hard to sit, you know, without reacting. It's very difficult. Therefore, you can put any person like this, any executive, any powerful politician, as it is said, to conquer, you know, to conquer the external enemy, easier. But to conquer the inner enemy, you know, the irritation, the pain, the fear, the worry, and anything that arises, you know, when you are sitting, the sleepiness, the boredom, to sit through, you know, to sit with this. Very, very difficult. So anybody, you know, will get up, anybody, any people will get up and leave. So it's not that everyone can do it. Yeah. So, yeah. So then the questions, some question is about so the primordial awareness and affliction, what comes first? The purity of mind, this primordial innate awareness, the mind being pure since beginningless time. There's no beginning to it, and we never ceased. You know, it always existed like that. It is existing and will exist. Therefore, this mind that is the mind that is primordially pure, it is unmade. Say, all right, is unmade. Unproduced, it is unconditioned, so can never change. Yeah, this mind can never change. Yeah, they said also say that it is polluted. It is covered by the so-called adventitious stain, you know, the occasional stain, and they make the example sometimes like the clouds obstructing the sky. Yeah, but. With the cloud, that is just an example, we cannot take it too literally. But with the clouds obstructing the sky, one may think where there is a beginning to the cloud and end to the clouds. You know, the clouds arise and pass, this is the beginning. So, but with regard to the so-called affliction, the stain that pollute, you know, the mind, they also don't have a beginning. So the so-called ignorance doesn't have a beginning, but it has an end. Yeah. So the purity of the mind being pure since beginningless time, is always like that. It is and will be. There is no end to it. It cannot change, right? It is unmade, unproduced, unconditioned. Same, the ignorance, it doesn't have a beginning, but it has an end. Yeah? It doesn't have a beginning. So there is, we cannot spot the time when the ignorance ate the apple. You know, we cannot find. So, but we can say, stop eating it. You know, it's creating lots of problems. We can say, stop eating the apple, but we cannot go back. When did it begin? Because if we find a beginning to the, if you find a beginning to the ignorance, it means the mind was once pure and then it becomes stale, which means the risk is that then again the mind, then you eliminate the affliction, and then again they come back. That's impossible. Yeah. Once the affliction eliminated for good. Yeah. Therefore, the so-called affliction do not have a beginning, but they have an end. Yeah? There is an end. Because the affliction, they are not eliminated. You know, the affliction is like when we, the so-called ignorance seized. When we take the example of the person being mistaken, no? A person on the basis of a scarecrow, so it is a scarecrow dressed in a certain way and we perceive a person, it appears as a person. How do we eliminate this misconception? By walking towards. Yeah? So walking towards the object, you get closer, 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 and we see there is no really person. Yeah, there is no person. There never been. So there is not and there never been. Yeah? So same, ignorance is eliminated again, but we don't eliminate really the ignorance. The ignorance is subside, yeah? The ignorance subside like the wave in the ocean, everybody is so, and they will come back again. You know? So when, as it is said, this, there is the purity of the mind, the ground, this purity, and then there is the expression, no? Attachment, anger, all these are expression of the so-called pure mind, expression. Once the nature of the mind is understood, then this so-called affliction don't arise no more. Yeah? Therefore, it's not a question of eliminating. Once the nature of the mind, once reality is understood, no more klesha arise. That's what happened. No more klesha arise. It's not like one eliminate, you know. Okay. So the elimination is in the sense that no more arising. It's no more ground for the arisal of affliction. It's once the wave sink into the ocean, come back into the water, the original source. So the the so-called expression, no matter how of anger, attachment, ignorance, so forth, still mind. Yeah. When the one understands the nature of the mind, all these so-called affliction, they sink, dissolve, subside. Yeah. Go back to the original source. So dissolve, completely dissolve, and no arise, no more. So no more arise. So they find no reason to arise. So therefore there is no beginning but there is an end. Yeah. So there is no beginning to the affliction but there is an end to the affliction, to the ignorance. Then the five mental and the omnipresent and the omnipresent mental factors and the ascertaining mental factors, they are different, they have different function. Therefore the ascertaining mental factors like aspiration, it's not omnipresent. So when we say omnipresent, means in order to have an experience, we need. So as I'm speaking now, there is a intention. Otherwise, I cannot speak. Yeah, there is attention. Otherwise, I don't remember what I said earlier. There is discrimination. Otherwise, we just words. There is contact. No, so there is an experience and there is feeling. Like constant experience. So this is always. So it's always present. Aspiration, appreciation, faith is not always present. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. They come and go. Arise, pass, There are moments where they are present, there are moments where they are not present. So they are not omnipresent, they are not always there. Yeah, that's why there are the omnipresent are those, only those. Yeah? And even if one still has aspiration all the time, still it doesn't count, it doesn't make it all, you know, only present. Yeah, all the time present. Yeah, doesn't make it omnipresent. Okay. Then dullness and boredom. So the question regard to feeling dull, and bored. So that is so feeling dull and bored. Then one can say, oh, welcome to the meditation. Yeah. So good. Yeah. Finally, you arrived. Yeah. So if you don't feel bored, sleepy, and then one may wonder what's going on. You know? So either you are already enlightened. So either you are already enlightened, or the mind is somewhere. So something else is happening. Sleepiness. One can see the nature of sleepiness when one does a longer retreat, and he sees that the sleepiness occur particularly at the beginning, the first 3, 4, 5 days. And then one experiences only the sleepiness that is related to real reason, they say, like the food, the tiredness. The sleepiness that everyone experiences. So the sleepiness in the retreat at the beginning is pretty much the reaction to the practice. It's the reaction to the demand of effort. It's the mind that trying to escape, avoiding the hardship. Yeah? And the sleepiness, there is a certain pleasure involved in sleepiness, so the mind try to escape, avoid, And what a better place to avoid hardship and pain? Sleep. Yeah? So the mind is seeking that. why it bothers the meditator? Because the meditator knows I can't sleep. But if the meditator doesn't know, he just go to sleep. Yeah? So he just sleep. But because the meditator knows I can't sleep, I have to be awake, but sleepiness still arises, or therefore there's a frustration, there is a battle, right? So there is struggling, I can't really sleep, but I really like to sleep, I can't sleep, but the sleep is there. So there is, on top of the sleepiness, there is the frustration, that one knows I can't do that, or I don't want to do that, either I can't, or I don't want, I want to be awake. So there is a, so it becomes a frustration. Yeah? So so the frustration and the struggling with regard to sleepiness. So it's an extra, so on top of the sleepiness itself is extra obstacle. Yeah? The thing is, there are certain things that have to be repeated, we went through the others during the retreat, but there are new people, Everything that, whatever one is experiencing now, like sleepiness, agitation, or distraction, boredom, everything is completely normal. It's exactly what the person experienced at the beginning. Normal. It's very normal. So, as I said, if you find yourself walking, walking around this place with just your socks on, that's all. That's not normal. Yeah. If you find yourself walking naked, that's not normal. The rest is normal. Yeah. So the rest is all right. So. Boredom, again, part, So the boredom is experienced because everything has been taken away, So there are many things the person can do in retreat. So therefore the mind is constantly seeking, that are seeking entertainment, and we know there is no entertainment. Yeah. So the mind is constantly seeking because you are habituated. It's not that we have a different mind in retreat, still the same mind, the addicted mind to be entertained, to pleasure. So because one cannot converse, you know, cannot have conversation, cannot certain things, therefore naturally, so the mind become bored. So it's a normal thing. So that's why then come into play the two things are very important. That's why the aspiration is very important, and particularly the appreciation. So these two mental factors. When there is aspiration and appreciation, then there is less boredom. Yeah? Therefore, the retreat, the problem in the retreat is not much the hardship, you know, the difficulty and so forth, which that it takes time. Yeah? The problem is not much the hindrances, the obstacle, is whether or not there is, you know, whether or not one aspire to experience, you know, aspire to meditate, to become a good meditator, and so forth, and particularly appreciate. If these two things, and also faith, three things are missing, yes, then it's just, you know, bored, stiff. You know, if there is not faith, no interest, no aspiration, no appreciation, yes, then it's just boredom. Yeah. But if the three things are present, but also, again, we should say that these two, one is a gradual thing, you know, the faith also eventually will come, you know, the aspiration, the appreciation also will come. So it's very deep, it's not like black and white, yeah, like that. So the only thing we can say is that it is all right, everyone goes through this, everyone, including the historical Buddha, same, you know, Buddha Shakyamuni. Well, you think that before becoming a Buddha was no bored? Must have been, yeah. So, the enlightened being Gautama, Buddha Shakyamuni, the founder of the doctrine, before going to sit under the Bodhi tree here over there, no, where we, the stupa, the place where the stupa is, he spent 6 years, right? He spent 6 years doing, you know, doing meditation practice that he realized after 6 years they were wrong. Yeah? So, if the enlightened being made a mistake, so he realized also we're wrong. And because, you know, because he made a mistake, that's why he realized that's no good. So he found the right path. The point is also to find the right path, we have to make mistake. Yeah? So this is how we find the right thing, yeah? So if we, because we make a mistake, then we find the right path. Therefore, mistake is normal. Therefore, being afraid of mistake is the last thing, you know, we can do. So we cannot be afraid of making mistakes, you know. But this is in general, not only meditation. So in general, if one is afraid of making mistake, then one doesn't learn anything, you know. Then one would engage in any activity, yeah. So there won't be any learning. So therefore, mistake is also good. So, but it's too much time on one question. So then we never finish. Dullness, okay. True love, yes. True love. But that is more like Oprah Winfrey type of, you know, topic. True love. Oprah Winfrey, true love. Yeah. The true love. In Buddhism, the true love is the love of the enlightened being. Buddha Shakyamuni, the Buddha, only the Buddha can have, they say, the true love in the sense is not conceptual. So Buddha's law, strictly speaking, we can say that the Buddha, Buddha doesn't have love, compassion, yeah? Doesn't have love, doesn't have compassion, doesn't have no, the altruistic mind, because Buddha transcend that mind. He began, no? He practiced for many eons, love, compassion, altruism, and so forth, and then transcend that. So it became spontaneous. Therefore, in the Buddha's mind, love, compassion, and the helping activity is spontaneous. Buddha doesn't think, okay, today I help that one, and then tomorrow I help that one. So Buddha doesn't have conceptual mind, so therefore all his activities are spontaneous. Therefore the benefit, whether one receives the benefit from the Buddha or not, depends from the individual. Yeah? It is the individual that, the individual karma. It depends upon the individual to receive the benefit from the Buddha. From the point of view of the Buddha, it's just spontaneous. No? So it's like the sun. So the sun, it doesn't think, I'm going to illuminate Europe, you know, and then in 12 hours, United States, and then again East. You know? So the sun, it just is there. Yeah? So what the sun illuminates, it depends on the object. You know? So same, we talk about the true love, we can say it's Buddha's love. That's the true love, in the sense it's non-conceptual. You know, non-dualistic, non-conceptual is spontaneous. But that is an exception. With regard to the ordinary being, like us, the true love is the one that we take the mother as. Yeah, the mother. We take the example of the mother as an example of true and manifesting, expressing true love. Because the mother, you wish the her child happiness. That's love, yeah? Love is the wishing someone to be happy. And the example, you know, is the mother, who has particularly that. And we can see even better, actually, without expecting anything in return. Interesting thing is, we see this even better with animals, you know? Even better with a human being, sometimes we can say the mother, it does expect something in return, right? When I want to be looked after when I get old, we can say, you know, yeah, look after you. So look what I did for you and now, and you. But animal, for example, they just do. You know, like birds or in general, they give their life, they can give their life for the babies. And it is very much spontaneous, you know, like without expect anything in return. Interesting. Looks like, I may be wrong, but the mother is like that, you know. So the love of the mother is an example of, say, true love. But of course, because it is a human, is a sentient being, ordinary being, still mixed with, therefore our love, no matter how pure, how true, sincere, is always mixed with attachment. Therefore, the love of the mother also is mixed with attachment. Of course, it's an ordinary, we are human being. Yeah. So therefore we can call that true love is a sincere love, but there's attachment, that is normal, you know, that is normal. Therefore our love, it is, there is always some form of attachment. Yeah. Yeah. So depends, you know, how strong. So the difference between love and attachment. So the thing is, the real love is simply the wish for someone to be happy, while attachment is the fear to be separated, you know, from the object. So if in the mother, let's say, the fear to be separated from the child is stronger than the love, then it would make a true love. So depend how strong is the attachment towards the person. Yes. And then, chatting mind. So the chatting mind, again, it's like sleepiness, like boredom, like everything. It's, our mind is always shutting. Yeah? And then we see that particularly when we keep silence. Yeah? So when we discipline ourselves, when we withdraw the mind, then it's not that you may feel that in the retreat one experiences more distraction than usual, but in reality it's the same. Our distractions are exactly the same. The only thing is retreat. On one meditate is aware. So the difference is being and not being aware. Yeah? In everyday life, we are not aware of our distraction. Here we are aware of our distraction. So, therefore, the person feels You know, the person feel like having more distraction than usual, you know, than in ordinary life. And that is when people meditate, when people meditate, then they feel as if they have more sleepiness, more distraction, more anger, more attachment. But the thing is, when one meditates, for the first time, one becomes aware. But the person mistakenly thinks that actually is increasing. You know, the person thinks, it seems that they have more klesha and affliction than when I don't meditate, you know. So one may mistake that. One may think that it could be the cause, you know, because I'm meditating, and since I'm doing this practice, I feel more disturbed. Yeah. But the reality, the thing is that in everyday life, we are not aware of our distraction, you know, we are not aware of our klesha and so forth, because we, you know, we completely, we distract ourselves, you know, we keep ourselves busy, and therefore we are not completely aware of what is going on. When we meditate, when you sit silent like this, then we are aware. Yeah. So, therefore, we experience the same thing. It's not that we experience different thing. The only difference is be or not be aware. And it's very difficult to say whether one is has a chatty mind because of certain background or certain upbringing. So a chatty mind is a very human thing, you know. The chatty mind is all is a mind, you know. This process that we are constantly, whether we have a good upbringing or bad upbringing. Some people have a chatty mind with regard to past. Yeah. So some people have the chatty mind related to things that some people are hooked in their past. Some other people have not so interest in past and therefore become hooked with the future. Oh, I would like to. I hope that will be. So some therefore distractions could be either wondering about what is going on in the present, but mostly it's about past and future. Yeah. So that depends very much on our personality, the person. Some people, you know, if they had a very active past or problematic past or whatever, or happy past, but intense, let's say, past, then tend to be, to dwell, and therefore the chakti, the thinking, and the distraction, everything is related to that. Other people may have a very not so interesting past, and therefore they project everything to the future, you know, so the expectation, so the desire, to do this and that, it becomes stronger, and then again, chatting, same. So, whether it is past, whether it is future, whether it is good experience or bad experience, the chatting is same. So, this is human habit, chatting, commenting, and so forth. Yeah. And again, and we see it, you know, when we sit, then ordinary mind. Yeah. The ordinary mind is the very, you know, the mind that we experience. Yeah. The everyday life mind, exactly what we experience here in the retreat, happy, unhappy. Virtues, non-virtue, concept, and so forth, is ordinary mind. Yeah. That is the ordinary mind. And to get at the so-called the pure mind, the unstained mind, one begins with the ordinary, you know, with the ordinary mind. So, so the ordinary mind becomes the object that one begins. So within, it is the ordinary mind that needs to be that subside for the, you know, for the awareness to be experienced. So one starts with the ordinary mind. That's why the importance of the ordinary mind. Well, there's no shortcut. Yeah. It's not that one can isolate and go straight to the pure mind. One begins with the ordinary mind, and then the ordinary mind subsides. As the ordinary mind subsides, one sees a pure level, you know, a better level, a more clear level, and then it goes deeper and deeper and deeper. But this is how one starts, you know, with the the ordinary mind. The ordinary mind in the real sense, ordinary, you know. So the 51 mental factors, and this ordinary, it is an ordinary mind, it is the ordinary mind. I try to make rough, you know, so. Now, during the teaching, if you get bored, you can just look at this, you know? You can look at it again. So we described a bit this morning on the concentration. There are many objects of concentration. But before engaging in concentration, then there are so-called the purifying, the object of purifying behavior, So before engaging in the single-pointedness concentration, so then one. First begin to pacify the gross disturbance. So the gross disturbance, these are related to, what is more predominant, in the individuals. So some people, those who are very discursive, for example, those who have a very discursive mind, then they are advised to do like breathing meditation. That discursiveness, breathing meditation is the antidote, it helps. So it could be the individual that the predominant obstacle would be desire, strong attachment, and then the person will meditate on impermanence. So impermanence, it helps to cool the distractions, the passions, the attachment. Then for those who have strong anger, hatred, and then compassion, so the person is advised to meditate on compassion. So the person who has strong pride, then it is advised to reflect on the many things that one doesn't know. So no matter how knowledgeable, no matter how many things we know, there is always many other things that we don't know. So the person reflect on that, the many things that one doesn't know. So the antidote with regard to ignorance is the reflection on dependent arising, how everything depends. Nothing naturally independent truly exists, so everything depends. So that is the antidote to confusion. So more rather than ignorance, confusion is reflecting and observing, reflecting on how everything depends. Things happen because it depends. See, confusion, the same things, we are confused with regard to what is taking place because everything appears to be just coming from nowhere, right? The problem, the obstacle, anything that we experience, it looks like coming from nowhere. So therefore we are confused. So when one analyzes, reflect or observe, he sees that there is no such a thing as coming from nowhere because of this, that, because of this. No, because of just a memory and then happiness arose. A good memory, happiness arose. Or just a face and change your mood. It doesn't take much to change our mood. Our mood changes very quickly, and to us it looks like just like that suddenly, but it's not. If you are attentive, we notice, we know why, and therefore when we know why, we are not confused. So we are not confused. That's why no matter how painful, whenever we know why it's happening, then we are not confused. So, having to some extent pacified the gross obstacle, then one engages in meditation. The person chooses the object that suits better. So as we say, there are many objects of meditation. Normally one starts with the breath, because the breath, it is easy. It is always present. And because the problem with concentration is, the cause of concentration is mindfulness. Therefore, it means that the problem with concentration is distraction, losing the object, the memory. We constantly lose. So if we choose an imaginary object of concentration, then we tend to lose, right? And then therefore you have to bring back, you have to remember. So we need therefore strong memory, because we lose. Meaning losing the detail, the concentrating on, for example, if one takes an image of the enlightened being, the Buddha, as an object of concentration, then the concentration means to concentrate on the detail, the face, the hands, and so forth. So this we easily disappear, easily are forgotten. So therefore, one needs strong memory. So instead, beginning with the breath is always there. Yeah. So there is not the problem of not remembering the object. So the object is there to remember. So then there are different objects. As we say, it is at the navel, is a better place. Other in front at the navel. So either an object that is visualized in front of oneself, and the object is good to be the smaller, the better. Yeah? The object of concentration, the smaller, the better. When it is small, it collects the mind more easily. So therefore, the object of concentration should not be big one, but small. The smaller, the better. So, and there is, for example, there is. Remember one of the very first instruction I received, for example, in concentration was our teacher. And Gesi Giampalodro used to live in Switzerland. He taught a very nice object for training concentration. And is that visualizing one's body completely empty, so just the skin. Inside, no bone, no skin, no bone, no flesh. Inside, completely empty. And this also says also very good for healing. So visualize the body completely empty, like a balloon, just the outside. And then floating, kind of, at the level of the navel, down, like four fingers below the navel, inside, in between the spine and the front. A very tiny, 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 tiny dot, like the size of a sesame seed. Very bright, red, bright. So the body empty, completely empty. Therefore, this means whatever sickness associated with it, whether it is the liver, the heart, the organ. So one imagines it's gone, there's nothing, just space. Then at the level of the navel, but a bit down, like four fingers down. At the level of the umbilic, four fingers down, in between the spine and the front, this tiny, tiny red dot, like the side of a sesame seed, which is one's own mind. Yeah, one's own mind in that aspect. So one can begin to, single point, to the practice of single point with that object. So, and now if one is doing strictly single point. So with the breathing meditation, we are not doing strictly single point, because the breath moves. So therefore, the breath is a kind of preliminary, is a calming the mind, is preparing the mind for single pointedness. Therefore, it's always important to start with the breath. No matter how long it may take, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, then when the mind is calm, of course, you have to make sure that you are not so exhausted by the time you start with this. So when the mind is calm, then you start with the one I just described. But the thing is, the session, if you like, but the practice, when you do this type of practice with the dot, you know, red radiated, you know, red radiated dot, very bright, one's mind, has to be very short, like 3 minutes, 5 minutes, no more than that, very short. So do like 3-4 minutes, then stop, relax, then take it again. Not try not to indulge too much, like 20 minutes, half an hour, then you know you get lung. You know, I think people, some people know here, when you say lung, you know, it upset the nerve system, if I have to be careful. Yeah. Therefore, the single point concentration, so it needs to be very short, the session. Yeah. Try that. And the concentration, so the purpose of concentration is not much to mental stability, which is the means, you know, so the means to achieve the most important one, which is clarity. That's the purpose of training in single point, you know, actualizing single point. Concentration is for the purpose, for the sake of clarity. Yeah, so then one can really meditate, so one's mind become clear. Stable, yes, but particularly clear. Yeah, and not, it's not a question of clear with regard to the object, but clear with regard to the awareness that is looking at the object. Yeah, so with a single, when the mind is able to stay on the object for a long time, stable, the object become more and more and more clear, then the clarity is not much with regard to the object being clear, which it, of course it is, but very much the awareness. So the mind that perceive it, that's what is clear, and that's the purpose. Yes. Then the fifth object, you know, then one can investigate knowledge. So the fifth ascertaining object, knowledge. So here is the ordinary knowledge, so the knowledge, So is the knowledge, the investigation, or the intellectual knowledge, so the investigating knowledge. So when investigate, for example, the dependent arising, no, the arising, like the dependent arising the dependent arising phenomena, topic, let's say, so knowledge in that sense. So the investigating knowledge, the intellectual knowledge, investigating knowledge. So with so even instead of a single point concentration, then when one can investigate, yeah. So otherwise, single point concentration by itself is, as you know, is always emphasized, is wonderful. It leads, you know, it produces wonderful things. It is, you know, experience bliss, clairvoyance. One can generate lots of so-called siddhi, power. There are lots of extraordinary things that experience with single point concentration, samadhi. But it doesn't lead to liberation, because that too, eventually, you know, is going to degenerate, pass, you know. So no matter how long, so no matter for how long one enjoy this quality, so this realization, eventually that also will pass. It's in the nature of impermanence. So therefore, for liberation, it is the perfect basis, but itself doesn't cause, it doesn't lead to liberation. That's why it's knowledge that leads to liberation. Yeah. So the knowing the reality of things, yeah, the reality of the world, the reality of phenomena, that's what leads to liberation. So, knowledge. So then I think we start with, here we have the 11 virtue, but it's better to start with the 6 afflictions. With the 6 root afflictions. So the afflictions, in genitals, the affliction is that which is a turmoil. It's a turmoil in the mind. That's what the afflictions, they produce a turmoil in the mind. So they make the mind unhappy, and particularly that, they produce turmoil, agitate, turmoil in the mind. The cause of affliction is ignorance. That's the origin. So the origin of the affliction, the klesha, like attachment, anger, pride, no? Doubt, yeah. The root affliction. It is ignorance. And then there is the various cause of the affliction. So the afflictions arise, it depends upon different things. The so-called affliction, meaning the anger, the attachment, doubt, pride, this, they arise, first of all, when we meet certain object, like when we see something, we hear something, we touch, we smell, or we think, that's when affliction arises, become the condition for either anger or attachment or doubt or confusion, so forth. Therefore, object. Come in contact with, you know, certain objects. Then another cause of affliction is habit. So by, because we have, you know, familiarized, you know, we have habituated ourselves with anger, with attachment, and so forth. Again, it's easier for them to arise. So habitual tendency. So the habitual tendency is, and again, another condition for the affliction to constantly arise. So then there is another condition for affliction to arise is associating with certain people. You know? Also depends what we do with associate. That also become the condition for the affliction to arise. For anger to arise, attachment to arise, pride to arise, doubt to arise. Depends what we do with associate. Therefore, wrong company, wrong people. So then another cause, condition for the affliction to arise is like wrong teachings. Yeah. So coming across or following wrong teachings. For example, teachings. What way? Yeah. So teachings. Teaching like, for like, that that teach, say, that anger, for example, is good because anger makes you react. So if you don't have anger, how can you react? So anger, the force and time is good, type of things. Or attachment, desire. If you don't have the attachment, desire, how can you enjoy anything? So we do need attachment, we do need desire, otherwise very difficult to enjoy anything. So this type of thought, this view, is considered wrong. Yeah. So because to react, you know, we don't need anger, you know. So anger is not the thing that makes us to react, you know, to the so-called, when something is unfair. When there is injustice, we can still react, not necessary with anger, you know, because it is injustice, you know. It is unjust, thus, then we can react. Also, the Solemnness of the Dalai Lama, I make, or the teaching, anyway, in general, they make difference. One thing is reacting, so there is anger motivated by anger, and anger motivated by compassion. So, you know, it's different things. It's not that one does not react sometime with anger. Depends the motivation behind. And again, one take the mother, for example, or the parents, the mother as an example. Sometimes the mother, the parents get angry with the children, you know, when they whatever they tried, nothing works, at a certain point, you know, to correct their behavior, they get angry. You know, they So they are full, they do something verbally or even physically, but that anger is motivated by compassion. So therefore, there is anger motivated by compassion, anger motivated by anger. So what is the fault of anger, therefore? An action done out of anger is the one anger motivated by anger. Yeah? So same time, there is the anger motivated by compassion. In certain particular case, then it's different. Hmm? So, but anyway, then there is the topic of anger. You know that, see, if you want to, you know, when students are distracted, you know, sometimes students are distracted. If you want the student to get, you know, to get your attention, mention anger. The moment the people hear anger, you know, it's talking about me. They must be talking about me. Everyone is interested. So we all get angry, I guess. Catch the attention, yeah? And probably it's easier to explain, you know, the emotion, things. So another way to, so therefore this is how the affliction can arise. It depends upon the object, the tendency, they associate with certain people, certain teachings, and then misapprehending, yeah? So misapprehending the so-called three marks, yeah? The so-called, then the affliction, and also the arise, you know, when misapprehending the so-called three marks. The three marks are that the life is dukkha, the three marks are suffering, impermanence, and selflessness. These are the three marks. That these are the three characteristics of our existence. Yeah? Unsatisfactory, unstable, and difficult to control. These are the three marks. So normally we know under the name, no? Suffering, impermanence, and selflessness. Selfless. So when we don't understand this properly, then that becomes, you know, the cause of affliction. By not seeing clearly the nature of the world, our body, our mind, by not seeing clearly the nature of our existence, then we cling. Yeah. So we create desire, yeah. So, not seeing correctly, the nature of the world being the nature of suffering. So we misapprehend that. So we cling to it, generate the desire. We think that things are beautiful, things are wonderful, and so forth. So when we misapprehend the second, everything is impermanent. But when we misapprehend that, everything appears to us being static, permanent, stable. Yeah, that is again that produces clinging. Yeah, that produces clinging. Yeah, then the third is things are selfless, but because we don't apprehend that correctly, so we cling to the self. Yeah. So, therefore, clinging to the self, which is the very cause, you know, of all the afflictions, the clinging to the self. Yeah. So, therefore, when we don't see life as it is, unsatisfactory, unstable, and selfless, so our pleasure increase. What does increase? Increase the clinging. Yeah, that's what increase. Increase attachment, which then in turn causes anger. Yeah. So, the cause of anger, we become angry, particularly because of attachment. Once attachment stops, also anger and the rest stops. So, therefore the klesha. Then when we look specifically, when we look at klesha individually, so attachment, the first two are attachment and anger. Of these two, attachment is very difficult to attachment is very difficult to eliminate, more than anger, but anger is more destructive. Yeah, so the difference. So anger is more destructive than attachment. Attachment is more difficult to eliminate than anger. So attachment is stronger than anger. Yeah? But anger, no matter, so but anger, so attachment can arise all the time and stay with us for a long time. So it's difficult to, you know, to separate. Anger, even if it comes, you know, for a very short time, is very destructive. Even a short, you know, as Shantideva says, you know, a short moment of anger can destroy eons of, you know, positivities, eons of virtue, eons of merits. You know, the moment of anger is very destructive. So, but here we have attachment. No? Attachment, it is a mental factor that sees a contaminated object as attractive and wishes to acquire it. But here, by the way, this is from Geshe Jampatecho teaching. I forgot, you know, to put actually from Geshe Jampatecho teachings, this definition. This. And so it's just general, it's not complete, yeah, just have something, a basis. But here there is one important thing, you know, which actually I forgot to mention. It is a mental factor that sees a contaminated object as attractive. But this being attractive, and it is very important, actually you can write yourself, is overestimate its attractiveness. You know, the quality, the thing with attachment is a projection. So this attractiveness is projected. Yeah. So therefore, sees a contaminated object as attractive, which is projected by the mind. Yeah. So that's the thing with attachment. So the attachment is based, you know, is we are attached to that which is beautiful. Yeah, that which is regarded as beautiful, perceived as beautiful, as agreeable, as attractive. Yeah? So this being attractive, this quality of being attractive, is not in the object. You know, it's not intrinsic in the object. It is a projection of our mind. Yeah? Nothing is, you know, nothing in accordance to Buddhism, particularly to the so-called middle way school, nothing exists from the side of the object, yeah, including the object itself. Nothing exists inherently, independently. So there is not independent existence of anything. Particularly, so the qualities are as a particularly qualities such as beautiful or ugly, yeah. And so forth. Mm-hmm. But I think we stop here for tonight in attachment. Dedicate a merit. Dedicate a merit. May all beings everywhere, plagued by suffering of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, nor ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighted down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are long with toil be restored and find repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water, delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the fallen find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains, a bountiful harvest. May your medicine be effective and all some prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be free from the ailments. Whatever disease there are in the world, may they know and put again. May they frighten cease to be afraid and those bound be free. May the power that's find power, people think of benefiting each other. Through the merits of these virtuous actions, may they quickly attain the state of Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, Bodhicitta, that has not arisen, arise. And may that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. And then make your own personal dedication and personal prayer.